WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arkin, Andy Hart, nice to have you with us here today as we cruise into the 5 o'clock hour. Another big round of applause for Brian Frazoco with that tremendous montage of what was a disastrous evening at the Meadowlands for the New England Patriots. They get smoked by Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. They fall to 1-2 on a season which each week has gotten just a little bit worse, and a lot of people think maybe he's even bottomed out here with this loss to the Jets. I would say, au contraire to that, you got a lot of football left to play. You got 14 weeks of football left to play here. This is probably not rock bottom, people. I hate to put it that way, but you got a long way to go, and we'll see. We'll see if it gets worse. We'll see if maybe it gets better. We'll see if Drake May goes in this weekend, or next weekend, I should say, against the San Francisco 49ers. I know some fans want to see that. Some of you don't. We've heard from both of you, and we continue to hear from you at 617-779-7937. That's your phone number. By the way, I'm live at the Ford Clubhouse Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and the freedom of choice. Shop deals built for you on the New England Edition F-150, official truck of the Boston Red Sox. And when I say that it's not exactly hopping out here on Lansdowne Street, it's not great weather. It's been like threatening a big storm here all day, and I think the tarp has been removed. Tarp is off the field. It hasn't rained for a while, but it doesn't seem like there's much of a buzz here for this game tonight, maybe because the season's over for the Red Sox. But there's some Twins fans. Twins fans don't want to get their season spoiled, so they're in here. They'll be loud and proud, I'm sure. But we're talking Patriots with you until around, going a little bonus show here today as we go until about 6:15 and then hand things over to the Mass Mutual pregame show. Andy Hart. We talked about this early on in the show. What was the most disappointing aspect of last night for you?
Tackling. I thought that was a given. I thought Peppers, Duggar, Jones, Tavai. And I know you were without your leading tackler, but that doesn't mean just because Jawan Bentley leaves doesn't mean everybody else forgets how to tackle, or at least
no one else
shouldn't.
Can tackle, I guess. Yes.
Like, you know, Josh Uche meets Allen in the backfield. He doesn't need to let him run through him and pick up yards instead of a tackle for a loss. So the fundamental aspect of this loss started with tackling for me, because if they tackle better, they probably get off the field a little bit better. You know, they gave up the Lazard touchdown, right? The first one was like a broken 9-yard tackle to get into the end zone. So I would start there, because I have a lot of questions about a lot of the other stuff that wasn't that good. But if we now add tackling, and you're not a very good tackling team on defense, well, you might be right. They haven't bottomed out. If they're going to continue to tackle like that, they have not bottomed out.
Yeah, the defense for me, I mean, it was really the two things that were supposed to be the strength. The defense and the run game, both of those last night I thought looked bad. The defense looked bad. He didn't really get any sort of pressure on Rodgers. He had the two sacks, but it didn't seem like he was really ever under siege. He didn't get one 3-and-out the entire game, which I still can't believe. And your run game. I mean, come on. You got nothing out of Stevenson except for a fumble, which he lost, and he's fumbled in all three games now. So the two strengths, the two supposed strengths of this 2024-25 Patriots team were both on display last night as not strengths but weaknesses. And in some cases, you can even say debilitating weaknesses, liabilities almost, you know? I mean, and this is a team that has no pass offense, and wasn't really expected much on special teams. Now, the punting ended up being the best part of the entire aspect of the franchise, which is never something you want to see in a rebuild or anywhere else. But that's the reality right now. Like, you got outclassed by the Jets in their home opener and a 40-year-old on a short week, and that's the reality that we have to be living in now. The reality 2 weeks ago was that you shocked the world and beat the Cincinnati Bengals, and wow, isn't that great? This is a new reality, and it happened very, very quickly. It's going to take another couple of wins, I think, to get back even close to that week one feeling that we were at, that week one high of beating Joe Burrow. It seems like it was an awfully long time ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, and especially because it came in week one, because right. Week ones can be weird when, you know, strange things happen, no one's ready, blah, blah, blah. So there's almost even more reason to write it off. I am not going to feel the way I felt after week one just because they go out and do that against, I don't know, Tennessee or Jacksonville. Let's just pick an opponent. Maybe they put it all together. They tackle well. They run the ball. They put, okay, yeah. So can you do it 2 weeks in a row? Because you haven't shown necessarily that ability to do anything consistently. You started high and have faded since in almost everything. Almost mm-hmm. everything has been in a downward trajectory over the first three games of the season, from where you started in Cincinnati to where you look like you're heading toward in San Francisco next weekend.
Yeah, it's gonna be a tough watch next weekend, I think. It's just gonna be, we'll see who the quarterback is. That may make it a little more palatable, but I think it's gonna be a bit of a trip to the dentist if I had to make an early prediction here. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Let's go down to the great state of Rhode Island and talk to our good buddy Matt. Hey, Matt.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up, Matt?
Yeah, as soon as I heard Barrymore was, you know, had those health issues, I really had a really bad feeling about the defense. I mean, I thought he was place for an all-pro year, and you're talking about a guy that takes two or three guys up and everyone else is running loose, and obviously you've been like, you know, that's the story. But, you know, with Drake May, I'm not talking about injury aside. We have time of the Thursday game. He's playing next week. He's starting against the 49ers. If you're worried about ruining a guy, then he's not the guy, in my opinion. Plus, you're going to lose the team. If Jacoby can't make the throws that he can make, so put some read options in there. You know, start, you know, short drops, quick plays. Come on, let's get on with this process here. That's what I think. Thanks.
All right, I'm with you, Matt, but I also don't really care about losing the team. Like, you know what I mean? What, you're going to lose KJ Osborne? He's going to check out. Tyquan Thornton's going to check out. Like,
Pop
really?
Douglas.
Like, is that Pop Douglas? I mean, listen, he already is discontent.
No, he's happy.
And you can see that. Well, maybe he's happy now, but
yeah,
he already voiced some discontent in order to get some touches in a game where they got their ass stomped. So it's like, great. You know, I hope you're happy. I hope that's all. I hope you got those highlights. And listen, I thought Pop Douglas had a nice little game, but it goes to show that if an opposing defense, and they prove this, the Jets prove this, and I think it's going to be the case going forward here, any opposing defense that can shut down this team's run game can beat them by three scores. I mean, that's the way it's going to be this year. You know, that's what you are, and if you can't do that, you can't do anything.
Mm-hmm. And San Francisco has the capability of doing that, and that's another reason why I would just be cautious. And I know I'm kind of playing both worlds. Like, I want to play Drake May.
I know. You're sort of riding the fence here a little bit.
Because I don't think you necessarily, you know, if you're going to teach your kid to ski by doing the whole go to the top of the mountain and say, all right, follow me down, I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. If you want to get down, get down. You can do that. You don't have to pick the biggest mountain, right? You can pick a littler mountain.
Yeah, you go on a bunny slope first.
Yeah, I'd rather have the bunny slope, which is more the Dolphins at home than the 49ers in San Francisco. You're throwing them out there.
Why can't garbage time be the bunny slope? Why couldn't that have been the bunny slope right there? You're in there in a game that doesn't matter. It's the Jets, and you're out there just sort of slinging it around.
Because it's garbage time.
That felt like glorified preseason.
Yeah, everybody knows it's garbage time. Everybody knows there's nothing on the line there. He knows it. He can try to treat it like it's his time or whatever, but everyone knows the game is over. This is meaningless football. Half the people have left the stadium. Half the people have clicked off their prime, and you can't create the atmosphere of starting the game without starting the game. You can't create the atmosphere of, if I go 3-and-out and I watch Brock Purdy go down the field and go 7-0, how that feels. Like, that is where it counts. It counts and it matters. This didn't count. It mattered. It's good to get him out there. I'm using Gerard Mayo's terminology again. This didn't count. The game was over. This was not any more meaningful regular season action. He got out there. The next step is the start, and I still think that's a relatively significant step, especially if you make it on the road against a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think that at some point you're going to have to do these things, and I don't really think that whether your first start is against the pushover team or against the really good team, you know, you can try and plan it out like you're going to have this perfect start to the year and all the conditions are going to be just right for a guy to have a big, long career. But it's also just one game, and a game where I'm not expecting a whole lot. I mean, I think whether it's against Miami or San Francisco, Drake May's first start, there's going to be some problems. There's going to be some growing pains. There's going to be some lumps he's got to take. Maybe there'd be more of them in the San Francisco game, but it's the NFL. There's some good players on that Dolphins defense too. So I just don't think, you know what I mean? Like, I just think that you're not really going to have this soft landing that, unless it's like Carolina or something that you're hoping for. And they don't play Carolina this year. You know, they got a pretty tough schedule. I think you might as well just rip the Band-Aid off.
Do you even care about the home road thing? And there's two ways to look at it. The comfort but also the pop of home. I think the Crafts want the pop of home. I think they want him to start at home. I do. I think there's some value PR-wise, marketing-wise, and not that that should be a consideration for Gerard Mayo or Alex Van Pelt or anybody else, but I also do think there are football reasons where you just say, it's easier to be at home. It's easier to not fly across the country. It's easier to wake up in the bed he's used to and get to the stadium whatever time he wants to and start the process of game day, however the hell he's going to start the process of starting game day for himself.
I guess. I mean, it's not like he's been on the team for a long time, you know, this game day routine. Like, it's only 3 weeks into the season here. So, I don't know. I don't know if that makes a difference. I just think that it's not like you're
disrupting anything.
So, you don't
think home field advantage is a real thing?
Not with this team. Not really. I mean, this team was 1-7 at home last year. I don't think there's any home field advantage.
No.
This team
I just think in all of sports at all levels, home field is
some places
easier,
I think there
better,
is. I don't
funner,
know if it,
like whatever. I think
I don't know if it matters for a rookie. I mean, maybe the pop does, I guess. But I think even if you don't,
but if
start
he struggles,
home,
couldn't it hurt more? Like if he's struggling at home and now the crowd's booing him or something. You know what I mean? Like I feel like that could end up hurting him more.
That's I know Mac Jones didn't like that.
That's on you people. If you boo him in his NFL debut. That's a bad home crowd.
The Joe Milton chants are going to start. That's going to really hurt his confidence.
If you people do that, then you are a bad, bad fan base.
617-779-7937 is the phone number. I may or may not have been one of the Michael Bishop cheerers back in the Drew Bledsoe days, so I can't speak to that. I can't.
You've
say
been
that
a
it was
moron
a bad
for
thing.
How many decades?
Oh yeah, because Bledsoe was really killing it all those years.
Light years better quarterback than Michael Bishop.
Well, we don't know that because Bishop never really got a chance to unleash the Dragon, Andy, and I'll stand by that.
Excuse me?
We never really got to see if Bishop could go out there and play or not because Bledsoe kept getting all the reps. That's why we kept chanting for him. That's why we were filling up Sullivan Stadium on those crappy benches yelling for Michael Bishop because we weren't quite sure what we were looking at there. And it ended up, he played in the Arena League, I think. He didn't do much after that, but whatever.
That's my point. Thank you.
Yeah, it was it was just something to see. We were all tired of Bledsoe at that point. People got very tired of Drew Bledsoe. That's one thing people don't mention in all these documentaries. Everyone was sick and tired of Drew Bledsoe. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Brian Frazoco is going to tell you what's trending. And when we come back, we'll get back to your phones. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. It's WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcand, Andy Hart, and you. We'll get to the phones in just a minute. We played that clip a bunch yesterday, Andy, and that was from the Hillman 5-year anniversary on EEI, I believe, that show that they did. That was Robert Kraft, obviously, calling in, saying congratulations, talking about the Celtics, and talking about how they have the foundation. Don't know how many games they're going to win this year, but how the pieces in place to start a foundation. And I'll tell you what, maybe I'm being dramatic. I've been known to do that, certainly after week one, and now maybe here in week three again it may be happening. But I look at that game last night, I look at this roster, I look at this whole situation, and I'm not seeing a one-year turnaround Houston Texans type of rebuild. I'm seeing a multi-year rebuild, if it even ever is successful. It's going to have to be at least another draft, maybe another two drafts, and another round of free agency here before I consider this a roster that you can do anything with, like a functioning roster. Like I think you're way away from that. And these last two games, I know that they had a chance in the Seattle game and that, you know, eventually they ended up getting outpaced. But last night, that wasn't the type of game where you got, like, at least no one today is going, they're this close to being 3-0. No one's saying that today. You heard a lot of that after week two. Wow, they're this close to being 2-0. No one's saying that about this last game. That was decisive. That was the type of game that I think is going to be hard to recover from. And, I think that the entire concept of a rebuild here for these Patriots now is, I'm looking at it a little bit differently. I don't know about you, Andy.
I am not. In fact, if we reach this point next year, both as a show and as a Patriots team, it is going to be, in my opinion, talking about a competitive, good Patriots football team of talent that has a chance to win games, has a chance to be significantly more competitive than what you're seeing right now. And if it isn't that, then I think we're talking about long-term changes, regime changes. Elliot Wolf's not the guy. Jerod Mayo may not be the guy. Hell, what we learned with Bryce Young, it may be Drake May is not the guy by that point, because when you use the number 3 overall pick in the draft and then the other picks that go with it, and you use, I spent a couple $100 million on contracts this offseason, mostly for re-signings of guys like
almost
Duggar,
entirely for re-signings, but
he still spent a boatload of money, and you're going to do that again. You're going to have a top 5 pick, and you're going to have all those picks straight on through all the rounds in the top 5 picks in those rounds. You're going to maybe even have some trades in there, and you're going to spend $130 million. If I don't feel like you have a good roster at this time next year, a competitive roster, a roster that can go out there and not have us talking about, well, you just got to deal with that position, it stinks, or you just got to deal with that area of the team, it stinks. If we're still having those conversations, then Elliott Wolff is not doing his job very well, because they have every opportunity to turn whatever this foundation is with guys like Barmore and Duggar and Gonzalez and Stevenson on Wenu into something that should be a decent football team if they make the right decisions in the next 10 months, 12 months heading into next season.
I'd like to believe that. I do. But I think on top of the offense, you're starting to see some holes in the defense, too. They don't have a lot of linebackers now that Juwan Bentley went down. Next year, corner's going to be another thing that they're going to have to rebuild. Like, there's only so many players you can pick in the draft. Like, I'm not convinced that they can just sort of leave that be. They went all offense this year in the draft. They can't do that again next year, and they probably should. But they probably have to. Like, your offense still needs a lot of things, a lot of different aspects of it that you can either build through the draft or try and go out and sign free agents if you want to. It's not going to be any easier to land free agent wide receivers, any good ones, if you suck again this year. Like, you know, this is all, it all sort of compounds on top of each other.
But that's where Drake May is a part of that. Drake May having a good second half or final month or whatever it is to make himself look like a palatable quarterback for T. Higgins, who's willing to come to New England, or whoever that guy is that you can pull off a trade or pull off a signing or whatever sort of the things play out in the next 6 or 8 months heading into free agency. You're right. They're going to need pass rushers. They're going to need to supplement this roster. But a good GM is hitting some of his mid-round picks, so you're getting impact out of those. And maybe he did it this year. Maybe Laydon Robinson and Caden Wallace are absolutely going to be your left guard and right tackle or something moving forward. And you go, wow, that was a good draft. He got a quarterback and then two linemen that are starters. If you do that and then you replicate that again, and I don't know what those other positions are, you get a tackle at the first pick, the marquee one, but then you add, as you said, maybe a third-round linebacker, fourth-round linebacker who can play, the next Juwan Bentley, who was a fifth-round pick. If you start doing a few of those, that's how you turn your roster over quickly. If you don't, then you're in trouble. And that's the reality of Elliott Wolff's life. Like, I'm sure he's wanted this opportunity his entire life, to run an organization, to be more than just Ron Wolf's kid and more than just a third or fourth fiddle in organizations. I think he was bred for this. He grew up wanting to do this. Now you get that opportunity, but it comes quick, right? You can be out of a job. Not that this is the Panthers and it's Tepper running the show, but you can you can be out of a job quick, even in a good place.
Yep.
If you blow two drafts, if he blows the third pick in 2024 and then screws up the third pick in 2025, and the owner's like, wait, what did I get for like two really valuable assets? Even a good owner is going to say, I don't think you're the man for this job anymore, and we need to move forward and start a rebuild again.
Yeah, and if you're relying that heavily on rookies too, I mean, listen, it takes a couple years sometimes for rookies to develop into what they're going to be, and they don't always start their careers off in a real great way, especially when you're leaning on them so much. I mean, all the rookies that got drafted this year are playing. You know, like they're all out there. You see even the tight end, right? Bell, you probably see him out there at some point this year. But all the other ones, like, you have them out there in a lot of cases starting. Baker's probably the only one that hasn't been a prominent part of the offense every single week. Like, this is and Drake May obviously too, because he hasn't gotten his first start yet, but all the other guys you got to sort of supplement that and build up an offense for Drake May, those guys are all playing, and I'm not sure how many, if any of them, are going to be long-term fixtures here in this offense. So
then
Elliott. You have to let them develop a little bit. That takes a year or two. You get your next draft, you go a mix of offense and defense. Those guys have to develop too. You're not talking about a 1 year turnaround. You're talking about 2, 3, 4 years maybe.
Are you including this year? You're not getting 4 years. Elliott, you're not getting 4 years.
I know Elliott Wolf's not getting 4 years. I'm talking about whoever's in charge. I'm talking about the rebuild and the franchise. But until they're good again, whether it's with Elliott Wolf and Jerod Mayo or an entirely different cast of characters, I don't see that changing anytime in the next 2 years. Like, I think, you know, you're looking at more of a 3 or 4 year rebuild realistically here.
Yeah, I think if you're not competitive and feeling much better about this roster by this time next year, then changes will be made. I think you're going down the road of Elliott Wolf being out of a job, because that means he blew multiple first-round picks and somewhere around a quarter of a billion dollars, or more than a quarter, half a billion dollars of Robert Kraft's money. And as much as he might want to be hands-off and they let everybody do their job, whether you believe that or not, that kind of missed opportunities will result in changes.
All right, let's go to the phone. 617-779-7937. Ryan's in Boston. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, I thought of a pretty bad Patriots loss in recent memory. That Wildcat game. I think it was Ronnie Brown had like five touchdowns against
game.
The Pats.
Yes. Tony Sperano, yeah. I remember that game. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was a good call there.
Yeah,
that was a shocker, that game.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So my other point was, Andy, I've been calling, I'm sure I can't remember, I actually called Jones a weasel on his last day. I've been calling the show for like probably 3 weeks before they traded Judon, saying, trade Judon, use the asset you get for an offensive tackle. The guy I had in mind at the time was Jack Conklin. I just think it was a missed opportunity to do it, and they should have done it, and now they're reaping the, not reaping the benefits, whatever the opposite of reaping the benefits would be. Reap what you sow, I suppose.
Yeah,
just a bad move, I think, by Elliott Wolf.
Yeah, but that was all I had to say.
Thanks, guys.
Elliott Wolf's inability to target the offensive line, to target a left tackle, is the early trademark of his tenure here right now. Mm-hmm. Because we haven't seen Drake May. It's going to be Drake May. It's going to end up, is Drake May a franchise QB or not? That's kind of what's going to decide his fate. But before we get to that point, the early picture of his tenure is him telling us that Chukwuma Okorafor can play left tackle, and that Caden Wallace can play left tackle, and that they were fine and happy, and whatever his comments were in training camp, feeling good about left tackle and the line and their ability to support a young quarterback. And all of it was just 100% wrong. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I guess Caden Wallace, is the jury still out? Like, he's a young guy that just made his first
I don't know start. Anything about Caden Wallace. He could be all right. I mean, yeah, it's a very small sample with all these guys. But, yeah, definitely I wouldn't say he's a bust yet or anything.
No, but it wasn't good last night, and they didn't want to play him there. So don't tell me how good he is and then not want to play him there. They didn't want to play him there. So that tells you what they sort of think of him internally. And by they, I mean Jerod Mayo, Scott Peters, Alex Van Pelt, not necessarily Elliott Wolf. And last night was bad. He was giving up sacks. Mm-hmm. He had one of those penalties for lining up improperly. He had back-to-back holding calls. Like, he was bad last night.
Yeah, no, he was not good. Brandon is also in Boston. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for taking my phone call. So as bad as that game looked, I did see some spark and some hope. I think we should turn the page on Jacoby Brissett. We know what he is. He's a statue of a QB. He's not going to give you much of some offensive play. I think it was unfair that they would put Drake May in there for 6 minutes. He didn't really get a chance to showcase himself, but I could say that he threw for 22 yards and his longest was 15, and he rushed for 12, his longest was 11. So what does that mean? That means he can keep drives going. I think you should put him in. You can get the running game going. Play action will open up. If the pocket breaks down, he can break for 10 yards and keep the drive going. So you can't get that with Jacoby, and I think they should really turn the page. How Brian Hoyer was Mac Jones' mentor, I think Brissett should be May's mentor, and just change the page and let May go.
All right, thanks for the call, Brandon. It seems like, and I've heard a lot of people say this, well, the offensive line doesn't have to be as good with Drake May because he can take off and run. He can take off and run maybe more than Brissett can. But do we want him to become this mobile running quarterback who's like out there a lot, picking up first downs with his legs, and that's sort of like his thing? Like, I don't necessarily – he did that a little bit in the ACC. I mean, he ran for some touchdowns his sophomore year. But I'm not sure that that's the type of profile I want for him as an NFL quarterback. You know, like, there, Jaden Daniels is running around, and his coach, Dan Quinn's like, we don't want you running around this much. I don't want Drake May running around that much. It sounds like, you know, like, we're talking about him like that's the only way they can get any yards or pick up any first downs. And that may be true. But, you know, we talk about protecting the guy a little bit, having him go out there and run around – that's a surefire way to get injured.
Well, first of all, Jacoby Brissett ran in week one. It was part of why they won.
Right.
It was why Jerod Mayo said he's the, you know, what did he say? Good running for the slowest black quarterback in the league or whatever he said. So that was part of his game. That was part of the way they won that week one game in Cincinnati.
Right. It wasn't part of the game plan. They didn't have designed runs for him or anything, but it was part of how they won. Yes.
And it will be more a part of the game plan for Drake May. And if you remember, this was one of the questions Josh McDaniels asked on the Julian Edelman podcast. He said, I'm really interested to see what he wants to be and what he wants to develop into. Does he want to be Josh Allen, who runs, who can run, who absolutely running is a part of his game? Or does he want to develop into a pocket passer? And he did run at North Carolina. He had 22 rushing touchdowns. Like, he was a runner. He can run. I always find this interesting because, to me, this is the dichotomy or the leading up to the draft. Everybody talks about you got to have a modern quarterback who can run and make plays with his legs. And then it feels like every coach that gets him tries to tell him to run less and protect himself right. and not run as much. And it's like, well, then why'd you draft a guy who runs? So there's that balance. Can do it when it's smart. I always use Russell Wilson as, to me, the example. When he was at his best, I thought he was the best at running, but getting out of bounds, sliding, rarely taking hits, putting himself in danger, in jeopardy. The flip side of it would be like Cam Newton. When he was at his best, he was a great runner, and it was not sustainable. He was a fullback. Right. He was taking massive hits and just not. So you don't want that. I don't even think you want Josh Allen, but you do want him to use his legs. And the thing I wonder is, because he's faster, more comfortable running, and more athletic, will he actually hang in the pocket a step longer than Brissett? That's the thing I wonder, because Brissett, I think, doesn't trust his speed, knows if he's going to run, he's going to run sooner rather than later, whereas Drake May could hang around for another half second, maybe keep his eyes downfield and make a play. I don't know. I'm just spitballing, speculating, and optimistically hoping here, but yeah.
Half second is very optimistic with this offensive line.
It is very optimistic. Very, very. No question. And but that's, I mean, we're talking a lot about just play Drake May sooner or later. I don't care. I don't want it to be this week. But as of Miami, the clock is on. I need Drake May. Unless you go out and upset the 49ers with Jacoby Brissett and somehow put together some great offensive game plan, there's more opportunities for the offense. It's probably more opportunities for Alex Van Pelt. Because, yeah, some of those zone reads may actually be runs. They're not, you know, Jacoby Brissett's not reading anybody and then running. He's giving it to Ramondre Stevenson, I would guess, 100 times out of 100.
Yep, and that's probably better for everybody. It's 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. Let's take one more call here before the break. David's in the car. Go ahead, David.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you. You know, I really enjoy you guys together. You guys put on a real good show, so thank you. So on this whole Patriots theme, you know, yesterday what reminded me of was when Brady was at his best games. And the other team, the opposite team, was like, oh, shoot, that's Tom Brady on the other side. So yesterday the Patriots was, oh, shoot, that's Aaron Rodgers on the other side, and we can't do nothing. Because everybody, from coaching to the players, quarterbacks, I don't care who you put in there, Brissett, May, everybody looks disgruntled, like a deer caught on in the headlight, you know, like they don't just they look unorganized.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, David.
What does a disgruntled deer look like?
In headlights. A disgruntled deer in headlights.
The deer's in headlights, so it's surprised, but it's also mad at its boss.
He's pissed off, but shocked. You got to be a good actor to pull that
got
off.
Got passed over for a raise at work or something, and it's disgruntled now. So, yeah, that's an interesting
But he's thing. In headlights for some reason.
Right. Also very surprised by the oncoming traffic. I don't know exactly where he's going with that, but it was a all around. I mean, there was no one part of the, aside from the punter, there was no one part of the thing you could look at and say, well, there's a silver lining at the very least. This looked okay, or that guy looked okay, or this unit on the defense looked like they were doing okay. It was a team-wide collapse is what that looked like.
And it was Aaron Rodgers. And I agree with David there. At some point, you're like, oh, we got a little pressure on him. Oh, he just got out of the pressure easy.
Right.
Oh, he's rolling. Oh, he hit the tight end for 10 yards and a first down. Or even the throw for the touchdown to Garrett Wilson. That's a perfect throw.
Yeah.
Not every quarterback in the NFL is making that throw. Some, I think Herb Street even said it on the broadcast, some quarterbacks, that's a pick six for Christian Gonzalez going the other way. He just ran 100 yards for a touchdown, and he's the star of the week. And imagine how hyped up all the fans would be and all the memes on Twitter would be after that. But
I'd get a Christian Gonzalez tattoo if he did that.
Oh, my God. But it was Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers beat you. Aaron Rodgers had a good game. Aaron Rodgers was doing the boot, and his numbers on the run were phenomenal, right? Rolling out. Like, he just, he had a good Aaron Rodgers. In some ways, there's no shame in that. It's everything else that went with it. The bad tackling, the dumb penalties. I didn't even get a chance to. I got on my whole my notebook. Uche, I didn't even had a chance to rip him yet.
Yeah, Uche, flexing. I forgot about that.
Jack Wagon flexing after a sack after he had a penalty and a missed tackle in the backfield down 21-3.
Yeah, that was tough. That was
the low light of the night, I think, for me.
I agree with that. Josh also, him being Uche called flexed. Uche, which is that he's French now, I guess. I didn't know that, but yeah, that was also unfortunate. But yeah, it was really. I mean, there was nothing to feel good about. There was nothing really to celebrate. You got taken apart by your rivals, a team that you dominated for decades and decades. And that, you know what? Honestly, out of all the stuff that happened, just losing to the Jets. Losing a game to the Jets that happens so infrequently. That's like a thing now. That sucks.
It's a thing.
Like I don't like that. Like that
it happened
that,
last the fact January.
It did, and this is carrying over now. You've lost two straight games to the Jets.
Get used
like,
to
what
it.
What are we doing here? Two straight losses coming to the Jets? Pathetic. And it's probably gonna be three. You're right. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. I have a fix. I'm not just going to sit here and bitch and moan all day, Andy Hart. You know, it sounds like that's what I'm doing, and it sounds like that's what you're doing. But I'm actually going to come out in this next segment with a fix for this team, something that can get them back on track, and I think it's really going to work. I'll tell you what it is next. That was from two seasons ago. Marcus Jones, not quite a walk-off, but basically a walk-off punt return for a touchdown to beat the Jets, part of that 15-game stretch of wins over New York that they had all the way back to 2015 had been going on there, which was finally broken last year in January in Bill Belichick's last game. And why do we play that? Well, number one, I wanted to get the sounds of the Jets beating the Patriots out of my ears, and also because I promised you I had a fix. And Jerod Mayo, Van Pelt, everybody's a little free game here for you. How about we get Marcus Jones involved? How about we get him involved in the offense? How about a pitch to Marcus Jones? I know that Pop Douglas was out there complaining and saying, hey, I need to get the ball, you know, give me the ball. And he got six, seven catches, 70 yards. Pretty good game for him. But doesn't have that big play potential that we know Marcus Jones had, or he had anyway before his injury. I don't know if he's got it again this year. But 2 years ago, there's an argument you can make. He was the most exciting, electrifying player on that team. And I think, you know, you're wasting him right now as a punt kick returner. You don't even return kicks anymore. And why not get him out there, get the ball in his hands, and see if he can take one to the house? What do you possibly have to lose at this point? Put Marcus Jones in. That is my platform. I'm going to stick with it until he actually gets a look in the offense. There's no reason not to at this point. I say go with Marcus Jones. Put 2-5 out there on offense, and let's get some points. Let's get some points on the board.
So there's no question that he is the most dangerous Patriot with the ball in his hands. That is, it's a fact. That's not an opinion to be debated. He proved that a couple years ago with the one play on offense where he took it to the house. I don't know if you're channeling your inner Deion Sanders. You put your Buffalo's hat on, two-way player, because I'm not the biggest fan of Marcus Jones on defense as a corner. Mm-hmm. But you don't have so are you playing in both ways? Because you don't have a lot of depth at corner. And if he's no longer playing corner, then I think the defense takes a serious hit, even though I don't think he's great.
I don't really care if you play him at corner anymore. I think, you know, like, it's fine. He's a fine corner. He's probably your best slot corner. But I think also now with Jones and Gonzalez out there, you could maybe mix that up a little bit. I don't know who the backup slot corner is, but, you know, there's other guys. Alex Austin or one of those guys. Just throw him in there for a bit.
Just a guy. Just put him out there.
I'm not saying you put him out there every single down. He's not going to be an every down wide receiver or running back or something like that. But you incorporate him into the offense. You bring him out there for a series maybe. And you give him a look. And if, you know, you don't have to play him both ways, like Travis Hunter the whole game. I don't think it's necessarily part of his repertoire at this point, because I don't know how good he is at either one of these things. But I can tell you there's nobody else. Feel better about giving the ball to right now.
You, that is the part of this you nailed. If you were just saying, who on this team do I want to have the ball, he's at the top of the list. I mean, and it's a short list. Now, your guy Pop Douglas might get mad if he's taking touches away from him in the slot. If you're using him as a slot receiver, jet sweeps, end-arounds, things that might have normally gone to Pop Douglas, he'll probably be whining again about not getting his touches, but I don't really care about that. I don't hate the idea. We talked about this a lot on the Six Rings pod his rookie year, and then Bill ended up doing it, and it worked, and we took a victory lap because he had a touchdown. Like, yeah, Bill, right. It's not that hard. You got a guy that's good with the ball in his hands. Put him on offense. Give him the ball. I don't hate it. And I wouldn't rule it out for this team. Now, they have a lot of guys that haven't really touched the ball. Booty, Baker. Like, they have a lot of actual offensive players who haven't had a lot of chances yet.
Osborne, so, yeah.
I don't know if they want to go down that road first and at least try, give those guys some shots because that's actually their job. But I don't hate your idea. I think it's worthwhile.
Speaking of which, Ken Laird is here, and he just woke up from a nap, and he said, "Hey, Arcand, it's Josh Uche." That's how he's pronouncing his name now. He said that after week one. That's what it is. It's Uche now. I didn't know that. I thought that they mispronounced it on the broadcast last night.
No. He asked to change it. I just don't know why.
I did not realize that he asked that. Maybe it was Brad. He's been saying it wrong the whole time, and now he wants him to say it right. I don't know.
And they let you on the Thursday Night Football pregame show?
Yeah. Well done, Prime.
Honestly, I had no
idea. Well done, Prime. Josh put the dimwit Uche on there. Could have had the brains of the operation, but you had the dimwit.
Like Club Shay Shay there. Uche.
The thing that bothers me, why didn't he say anything in his first 4 years in the league about
That's a good question.
What your name is. Like, if your name is wrong, say, hey, and you don't even have to tell us. Couldn't you just have told PR back then? Hey, Stacy. Hey, Aaron. How come everybody says my name wrong? Could you ask them to say my name right? Maybe put out one of those little pronunciation things or whatever. I just find it weird that multiple years later, after his name's been said a lot, the guy had a 11-sack season. It's not like he's been hiding on the practice squad for 4 years, and now that he's playing, he wants it right. He had an 11-sack season, and now he's decided that we've been saying his name wrong for 4 years?
Yeah,
it's weird.
Maybe Belichick didn't like saying it the other way, and he was like, "No, I'm going to call you Uche." And now that he's finally gone, he's like, "You know what? No, that's actually not my name.
Screw you,
Bill.
That's not my name."
If I could choose one or the other, I'd go with Uche if it was up to me. You know, because Uche sounds a little tougher than Uche. Uche doesn't sound very tough at all.
So now
Uche says sounds like ooh la la. You know, like that doesn't. I'm just saying what it sounds.
Doesn't
like.
Strike fear in the quarterback's heart.
It's like, uh-oh, here comes Uche. Like, uh-oh, here comes Uche around the corner. I don't know. I just feel like it's a little more menacing. It's a little
I don't care if it's Uche or Uche. Don't flex down 21-3 when you have made the number of mistakes you and the rest of your defensive counterparts have when you have a meaningless sack. That's all I care about. You can say your name however you want. I just wish you told me earlier because I like to get things right, and you wasted 4 years of our lives.
Yes. There are two, looks like young kids outside holding a sign that says free weed. I looked over, I saw, I guess they're not kids, but they look like, I don't know what they are. They're teenagers maybe. You see them out there, Ken? They got a sign
interested?
On one side, it says Gate 420, and the other side, it says free weed. Well, I'm
you
intrigued.
Interested?
I mean, come on, if you're holding up a sign like that out in public, I'm going to be intrigued by it. Yeah.
Tell them, give me like 15 minutes.
So
I
know where I'm going.
Yeah,
I'm talking about you guys out there with the free weed sign. Wait, over there? Down that way? Okay, good. I'll look into it. Thank you for the heads up. That's a very nice public service you guys are doing. Appreciate that out there. By the way, this is Fenway Park, which I can't believe I didn't ask Alex Cora about this. Eddie Vedder is on stage, says, yeah, I've been hotboxing Alex Cora's office all week long. And then he apologized for it. And I'd like to extend a similar apology to Ken Laird while he's here. Every time he leaves, I do the same thing in his office. But yeah, that is that was quite an admission, I thought. And then he's like, yeah, if Cora goes out there and he has any crazy play call, now you're going to know why.
Right.
I'd be honest with you, I haven't watched a lot of Red Sox these last couple of days, but that may be happening. It may not be. Either way, the Red Sox and the Twins open up their series tonight at Fenway on a gray day here down on Lansdowne Street. Andy Hart is exiting stage left. I'll be with you for a few more minutes as we get you ready for the Mass Mutual pregame show. Andy, talk to you later. And the rest of you, stick around. We got some bonus baseball coming your way right after this here on WEEI.